Today on Wings, International Women's Day greetings.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Bianca Miglioretto produces women's programming at Radio Laura in Zurich, Switzerland. She collected International Women's Day greetings and updates from women around the world to air on March 8th, International Women's Day 2021, and she shared the recordings with Wings.
Hello, my name is Nimi Chauhan and I'm from India. Greetings to all the gender equality champions, especially those who identify themselves as women on this International Women's Day. I know I may not see a gender equal and a gender just world in my lifetime, but I will definitely continue to push the boundary to the best of my ability every single day of my life. As I was reflecting on what issues I would like to speak about in my message to you, I realized that as women, we are constantly struggling and negotiating for our choice, our voice, and our safety. In my country and many other countries around the world, women still cannot exercise their choice for something as trivial as owning a mobile phone and something as crucial as choosing to marry a partner of their choice. Women's voices remain invisible and discounted. That is not considered important even within their family and the community. And women's safety is still addressed from the perspective of morality and honor rather than from the rights perspective. Women have a right to be safe in their homes, workplaces, and public places. But it seems my safety is my responsibility and it depends on what I wear, where I go, when I go, with whom I go, rather than the responsibility of the state and the society. I know I am privileged. I am educated, live in big city, and I have access to all the basic amenities. I speak at least one international language apart from other Indian languages. I have access to media and information, etc. But now imagine how much more difficult it is for women who are marginalized on account of their disability, sexuality, caste, ethnicity, religion, migrant, refugee status, geographical location, etc. What makes it more difficult is that we are witnessing a rise of the traditionalist and right-wing politics across countries around the world. It concerns me that the world is increasingly becoming intolerant, polarized, with hate, misinformation, disinformation, with communities pitted against one another, where citizens' dissenting voices are being repressed and silenced by governments across the world. An atmosphere of fear and threat of violence makes gender equality many times more difficult. But I see hope in the fact that we are also witnessing brave voices of young women who refuse to be silenced and are publicly standing up and speaking out for their rights. We need to stand together as women from across the generations. One message that we must send out loud and clear is, we will be defined by our abilities and not by our gender. As I sign out, thank you and best wishes to you all. Bye-bye.
Hello, lovely listeners of Radio Laura. I'm so happy to be able to send you this International Women's Day greeting. My name's Sonia. I'm a media freedom activist from Malaysia and a feminist and have been involved in community radio for about 25 years now. This year's been an interesting one already for Malaysian activists. We've had a fantastic judgment by the court overturning a state-based law which criminalised same-sex activities and relationships. That has been a really powerful moment in galvanising the LGBT community together. Unfortunately, it has, of course, resulted in quite a backlash as well, personal against the judges involved, but we expect to see a wider backlash against the LGBT community in Malaysia. We've had ups and downs over the past 12 months. It's the anniversary of a shattering change of government that happened in 2018, but that was overturned just over a year ago now, with implications for democracy, implications for freedom of speech, and of course every single one of those has an impact upon women. We're looking forward to deepening our work this year on issues to do with media freedom, on issues to do with the right to information, on community media especially. And we look forward to having a really spirited message to be able to send to you next year as we have the fruits of our labour, the ongoing struggles, making some headway over the next 12 months. Stay strong in these hard times, stay safe, and keep up fighting the good fight. Thank you. Bye.
Hello, dear audience of Radio Laura. My name is Yiping. I speak with you from Beijing, China, my hometown. This is a great opportunity to celebrate the International Women's Day on the 8th of March. This is so special for all of us as a woman, as people who are concerned about gender equality, as trans women, as genderqueer people. This is a very unique day that we remind us about our dream for a world that everyone can enjoy the justice, enjoy the equality with no discrimination. And we still have a long way to go. I just want to share with you some of the story about the women in China, what the challenge we face and what the struggle that we're now fighting. Maybe you know that Chinese women has comprised the highest participate in the labor force. However, equal pay for the work of equal value, it's still a struggle. And we have observed the increasing gap in terms of their payment, let alone the unrecognized, underpaid or no paid care work that's shouldered by women. Women in China only comprise less than one quarter of the seats in parliament. We still don't have a quota, that minimum one third of the seats preserved for women, as UN had advocated for. The target for women political participation should be 50-50. We still have a long way to go. In terms of the progress, we also very proud after the decades of joint efforts on the domestic violence law. 5 years ago, finally, we have adopted this law and start to implement this law. So 5 years later, many of the women's organizations, including All China Women's Federation, the women NGO groups, working together along with the lawyers, the judge, and the police, trying to put this law in practice. However, we still have the cases that exposed to the media on the women that suffered from the domestic violence, sexual violence, and all other forms of abuse, psychological abuse, physical abuse, and economic control. The International Women's Day, now we are trying to expand it to the International Women's Month so that we can raise awareness about the importance of the women's rights issue and its relevance to the overall well-being of the society, of the full potential that the people can fulfill in their life, regardless of their gender and the sexual orientation. This is a very important moment that we celebrate our gains and we remind ourselves about the continued struggle that we still need to work together. Yesterday, I met some friends, including the lawyers who work with rural women to claim the rights of women to land in the last 20 years, trying to defend her own land rights. And now she's defending the rights of her daughter. I think all these women and their commitment make this International Women's Day so meaningful. I'm so glad you're listening to my message. I feel like we're connecting with each other, even though we're not able to see each other's face, but I can sense that you also trying to do your work in your region. I feel like we're very close comrades. So let's celebrate together and get inspired from each other. All the best for your life and for your work. Bye.
Thank you, Radio Laura, for this opportunity to air my message on the occasion of Women's Day. Warm greetings to all women of the world. This is Mary Carling, manager of Radio Sagada Philippines. After several decades, the realization on women's role in development remains on paper. Laws and policies have not been translated into actions. Issues of inequality at all levels of political processes have not been comprehensively and genuinely addressed. Recently, in the Philippines, President Rodrigo Duterte declared that women are not fit in the highest position of the government. This is a sweeping statement that outrightly rejects the right and role of women in all levels of governance. In several media groups, women are harassed or imprisoned by the state forces because of their courageous voice. Within the women's sector, education and empowerment is an immense task. In all walks of life, this empowerment should be demonstrated with vigilance. We remain undaunted in the face of many challenges to the rights and welfare of women. In the community radio of Sagada, we ensure the participation of women in its governance. No doubt, the skills, knowledge, and abilities of women in the radio is accounted for. We encourage their full participation. No endeavor is attained without their meaningful participation. Mabuhay kayo! Long live!
This is Birgitte calling from Denmark to greet you all on this particular day of ours, the 8th of March, the International Women's Day. What is happening in Denmark that is of relevance to all of us? Well, I can say that whereas we had the sense here that some of our major challenges were the lack of equal pay for equal work and the lack of enough women in the boardrooms and in the decision-making positions, suddenly, a year and a half ago, the whole tsunami of information and documentation and cases and stories came forward of misbehavior in the corridors of businesses and political parties. Some had been going on and that should be stopped. It was clear to all, but that the size and the amount and the gravity and the variation of all of this misconduct, starting from unwanted sexual attention to much graver things and power plays, was surprising and terrible. In all its gravity, it's wonderful that it's coming forward. A lot of new rules are set up in organizations, new legal lawyers, boards that you can contact if things are happening around you to yourself or to others that you observe, where you can have a neutral treatment of your situation. These situations of non-disclosure agreements and settlements that apparently have been very common everywhere can stop. It has been very sad and terrible realization, but it's so good that it's all come forward, that we've all now aware, and that the women who didn't know what to do have also gained the power to go public. I don't think the corridors in the workplaces and in our parliament will be the same again. And I don't think they can. So this is very positive development in our part of the world, despite all the ugliness and gravity and power grabs that it reflects. So with this news from Denmark, have a good celebration. Enjoy yourselves and each other. Happy International Women's Day.
On Wings, you are listening to International Women's Day greetings and updates from women around the world, collected for broadcast by Bianca Miglioretto from Community Radio LoRa in Zurich, Switzerland.
Hi, this is Bianca from Radio LoRa in Switzerland. The COVID-19 pandemic makes the blatant injustice of this world even clearer. Poor people in the global south suffer much more from government measures, are more vulnerable to infections, and have less access to healthcare. Not to mention the chances of a vaccination in the near future. patriarchy and the capitalist economy are pushing women back into their traditional roles. Women struggle for the economic survival of the family, take care of the children during lockdowns, do most of the paid and unpaid care work, and suffer from increasing sexual violence. The pandemic must not be fought on the back of women for the benefit of the economy. Profits must not be put above health care for all. Let us strengthen each other in the boundless feminist struggle for a better world. I wish all of you a motivating and strong International Women's Day. March 8 is every day.
Bianca has done a great deal of community radio training around the world, and she is fluent in quite a few languages. For the broadcast in Zurich, she translated all the greetings into German. The next two greetings she collected are in Spanish, one from Spain and one from Mexico. I will do my best to summarize the content.
Durante el 2020 en España se registraron 83 feminicidios y otros asesinatos a mujeres.
In 2020, there were 83 femicides and assassinations of women in Spain.
La crisis del coronavirus no ha tenido las mismas consecuencias para las mujeres que para los hombres.
Coronavirus is affecting women differently from men.
Son ellas quienes más han sufrido los efectos adversos de la pandemia, dado que más del 50% de su empleo está en sectores...
More than half the employees who lost jobs to the pandemic are women, whose jobs are in business, education, health, and social services. At the current rate of gains, it will take 105 years to close the wage gap. Women in Spain take to the streets on March 8th, but the struggle for women's rights must be daily in order to come together for equality.
Pero la lucha por el feminismo tiene que ser a diario para que juntas podamos llegar a la igualdad. Informa Xela Falgueras desde Radio Televisió de Cardedeu.
Hola, les saluda Maru Chávez de México. Soy integrante de CIPAM, Salud Integral para la Mujer, una organización feminista que empezó a transmitir, producir programas con contenido feminista.
Maru Chávez belongs to the group CIPAM, which has been producing feminist content for public radio in Mexico City since 1991.
Y desde 1994 que nos asociamos a la AMARC, hemos estado trabajando en pro del derecho de las mujeres a comunicar y en pro de posicionar los derechos de las mujeres en otras radios comunitarias.
Since 1994, they have been active in AMARC, the World Association of Community Radio Broadcasters, where they work on women's right to communicate and on positioning women's rights within the community radio movement.
Además,
now they share a license for Radio Violeta, the first feminist community radio in Mexico. Radio Violeta plays women's music and uses the radio to raise awareness of women's rights. On March 8th, they are making the point that Mexico has now had radio for 100 years, and this is the first feminist station. They see themselves as adding a counterweight to the male-oriented patriarchal content of the other stations.
Consideramos que es un medio de comunicación importante para hacer contrapeso a los contenidos machistas patriarcales de otros medios de comunicación. Por tanto, celebramos la palabra de las mujeres y de las personas de la diversidad sexual también. Que viva la radio, que vivan las mujeres. Que viva la radio comunitaria y que viva el 8 de marzo.
Here are more of the greetings shared with Wings by Bianca Miglioretto of Radio Laura in Zurich, Switzerland.
Hi, my name is Nur Hasana from Community Radio Network for Democracy or Jaringan Radio Komunitas untuk Demokrasi in Indonesia. On the commemoration of International Women's Day this year, I would like to invite every woman in everywhere to choose the courage to speak out for all of forms of violence and injustice around them. Every woman has freedom, has the right to be treated fairly, and has the right to be herself, without coercion or pressure from anyone. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Nico from Indonesia. Wishing you health, safety, and compassion during the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm a working mom of three daughters. As a social activist, I know the fact that number of domestic violence cases reported increased since COVID-19 pandemic. Women in Indonesia become more vulnerable than before since domestic burdens increase due to the pandemic. They have to turn into their children's private tutors as well as managing household. They juggle multiple responsibilities at the same time. When they not deliver, they get violence from her partner or superior member of family. Today, when we celebrate International Women's Day, we will celebrate the equality and remind that women have right to decision-making in all areas of life, equal pay, equal sharing of unpaid care and domestic work, and end all forms of violence against women and girls. We deserve it. Thank you.
Warmest solidarity greeting to all the women on the occasion of the International Women's Day. As we celebrate this historical day in the midst of the corona pandemic, let us honor and salute all the women in the front line and all the women leaders that have demonstrated a more caring approach to this crisis. Let us also salute all the women who are protecting our environment, including my indigenous sisters across the globe. They are the ones protecting our biodiversity to avoid more virus and disasters, but are being attacked, abused, and violated by the patriarchal system that continues to dominate our lives as women. As we struggle to recover from this pandemic, let us gear away from the normal and the business as usual approach, as these embody the structural violence and exploitation of women. It is with the leadership of women that we can take another path for recovery that is caring, just, equitable, and sustainable for the people and the planet. Thank you.
I am Jom Salvador, Secretary General of GABRELA, Alliance of Women in the Philippines. In behalf of Filipino women who continue to resist and persist despite the disastrous impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic and the global economic crisis, I would like to extend our warmest solidarity with the women and non-binary genderqueer sisters from all over the world as we commemorate the 111th International Women's Day. Today, more than ever, as we find ourselves face-to-face with the worst global health, economic, and security crisis many in our current generation have ever come to know, women are called to persist even harder in our struggle for rights, social justice, and true liberation. This crisis has rendered many women, especially from among the working class, health insecure with no ample social protection, and disproportionately vulnerable to job insecurity, violence, abuse, and exploitation. Yet everywhere, women, frontliners, care and essential workers, farmers, community leaders, are the force that keep communities together and surviving. We are the voice that will not be silenced. We are the power that cannot be suppressed. We will grow even more in our collective struggle. We are women who have a world to win. Makibaka, huwag matakot, sulong kababaihan, dare to struggle, dare to win.
Friends, paying homage to all those who lost their life in the pandemic, I, on behalf of the National Federation of Indian Women, extend my warmest revolutionary International Women's Day greetings to everyone, especially who suffered of COVID-19. The corona has devastated everything. The capitalist mode of production and the way of development failed in providing proper relief to the people, but increased the intensity of the devastation of life and livelihood. In spite of the dismayed scenario, on this day, emphasizing on women's rights and gender equality, women world over celebrate our socio-political, economic and cultural assertions and achievements. Friends, help the women to march forward for a better status. Centuries-old struggles and sacrifices, but on this 8th March, we need to start afresh with more dedication and determination to regain and retain and proceed for a meaningful empowerment as equal citizens. The real challenge before us is how to bring the gender question of the center stage of the post-COVID agenda of the nation states. For this to happen, women across the globe will have to come together for a global campaign as they came together against war and for peace in 1945. We will have to force the international agencies like the UN to make sure that nation states are respecting gender rights, human rights and dignity. My warm regards and greetings to all of you. Half the earth, half the sky. We shall fight. We shall win.
Happy Women's Day. On this day, I, Prativa Chhetri from Nepal, wish to remind ourselves how strong and resilient we really are. Despite the troubles and hardship, we carry on believing in a better tomorrow. Every woman's life and success is an inspiration to the others. Let us celebrate our womanhood, our sisterhood, and cheer each other on. With best wishes and prayers for a happy and healthy 2021 to the sisters the world over. Happy Women's Day.
Wings thanks Bianca Miglioretto and all the women who shared these International Women's Day greetings and updates from their countries. Here's the greeting Wings shared. Here's a warm hello to Radio LoRa listeners from Wings, Women's International News Gathering Service, a radio series where every day is International Women's Day. I'm Wings co-founder and series producer Frieda Worden, greeting you from anti-COVID isolation on an island off the west coast of Canada. Wings started in San Francisco with the aim to provide coverage of the global women's movement beyond the end of the UN decade for women. That decade ended in 1985. In 1986, Wings began collecting stories from feminist radio producers around the world, including trans producers. We take the position that all major issues are women's issues, including the environment, labor, health, politics, and much more. The program airs in several countries, including the U.S., Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Germany, and of course on the wonderful Radio LoRa in Switzerland. Happy International Women's Day to you all. To hear Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org. or visit our new website, wingsradio.org/WordPress. We also have a daily news feed at facebook.com/wingsradio. Wings thanks our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose biweekly salons can be found at maternalgifteconomymovement.org. That's maternalgifteconomymovement, one word, .org. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service. Today on Wings, the history of the feminist press for its 50th anniversary.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service. The feminist press, based in New York, is known worldwide for republishing lost masterpieces by women. The director of the feminist press, Florence Howe, described the history of the press during a promotional tour in 1992.
One of the first things I get asked all the time is, what were things like 21 years ago? They were very different. If you went into a bookstore, Mrs. Dalloway you might find in paperback, and you might find one volume of Willa Cather. You'd find The Second Sex maybe in a paperback, because I taught it in the 60s. You would find no black women writers on the shelf. None. You would find very little black literature. You would find no Hispanic literature, certainly nothing by Japanese Americans or other Asian Americans or Native Americans, and you'd find precious little by women. I never heard of any of the writers we've published these 20 years at the Feminist Press. I went to Mississippi in 64, and I learned that my students in Mississippi had a subject to write about, freedom and blackness, that my white students at Goucher College didn't have. So I came back to Goucher College at the end of that summer, trying to figure out why my uneducated black students could write really brilliant poems and essays, and why my educated white students were really dead in the head and couldn't write anything that mattered to anyone, least of all to them. And so I started playing around. I asked them to write about whiteness. Well, they didn't know anything about whiteness. And so the next thing I tried was, what was your life like growing up as a girl? And they said, oh, we don't want to talk about that. That's boring. And I said, well, I'd like to talk about that. Tell me about that. And they got very angry. And the minute they got angry, I knew I was onto something. And so I persisted. And I looked around for books about growing up female, and there was very little I could find. I mean, I did find The Second Sex. I did find A Room of One's Own. Didn't tell me a whole lot. I found Doris Lessing, taught Martha Quest for a while. I taught The Golden Notebook. I found Mary McCarthy. My students hated all these books. They kept saying, why do we have to read these lady writers? They're terrible. We want to be writers, but we want to be Hemingway and Fitzgerald. And of course, it occurred to me, I could say to them, you will never be Hemingway and Fitzgerald. But I didn't really know what the problems were. That was my consciousness raising. That was 1964, 65, 66. By 69, my students were saying, what about the literature courses? I was teaching women writers in the writing courses, and I was getting good writing. But they wanted to know about my 18th century course. Why were there no women writers in it? I didn't know the answer to that question. But I began to look around, and by 1969, I was asking the people who had published me, book publishers and the New York Review of Books, whether they'd be interested in a series of books by and about women. And everywhere I went, I got the same answer, especially from the financial thinkers of these presses. It's a wonderful idea, but there's no money in it. And there's no money in it settled it. So I went away after 6 or 7 tries. And I had a husband at that time who was quite imaginative. And he said, why not do it yourself? And I laughed. And I said, you can't do a press yourself. I'd started a magazine with a couple of other people called The Radical Teacher, which is still in existence. But there's quite a difference between a magazine and a press. And I knew that. So I went to Baltimore Women's Liberation and I asked them what they thought of the idea. They thought it was wonderful, but they were all too busy. It was like Chicken Little, right? I said, will anyone help me? And no, 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 no. So I went home, furious, and said, forget the whole thing, to Baltimore Women's Liberation, and I took my family and went to Cape Cod for the month of August. When I got back, in my mailbox, there were about 100 envelopes with a lot of checks, all written to the Feminist Press. At my home address, 5504 Green Spring Avenue, Baltimore, Maryland, and I was really furious. Baltimore Women's Liberation had decided to announce the existence of this press, even though I had said I am not doing it alone, and I'd stomped out of the meeting in a rage. Not only did they announce it, they said that the press was doing biographies and non-sexist books for children. Now, that really got me into a rage because, A, I knew nothing about books for children. If asked, I would have said, I never want to have anything to do with books for children. Well, what had happened was that there was a woman at Baltimore Women's Liberation who had a 7-year-old who wanted to be a doctor girl. She had looked for books in this same month that I was away, and there were no books about women doctors. And she decided, well, we needed a set of non-sexist children's books. And so, you know, the feminist press was going to take care of that problem too. Well, I stormed around for about a month and then decided that I had to deal with the mail. And I called a meeting in my house November 17th, 1970, and said that if 20 people came out of the 100 who had written and agreed to work, that we would have a feminist press. Otherwise, everyone would get their checks back. And I really forget the whole idea. Well, of course, people came. Cynthia Secor came from Philadelphia. Some people came from Washington, D.C. It was a very interesting meeting, and we, of course, immediately began work on, guess what, the easiest thing, which was the children's book. And it happened, I had a book called I Want to Be a Doctor, which was a Chinese children's book someone had smuggled in from Canada. And in it, two little fat Chinese children, a boy and a girl. The girl is the doctor and the boy is the nurse. That's the startling thing about that little book. And so I handed it to a very talented sophomore student I had named Barbara Danish, and I said, Barbara, let's have an American version, only please, Barbara, no dragons. Barbara had filled my office with paper mache dragons bigger than I and with big drawings of dragons, and she was in her dragon phase. I shouldn't have said that to Barbara because, of course, the book turned out to be perfectly charming. It was our first book, The Dragon and the Doctor. And it was she and the woman she still lives with, who spent the next 9 months at a Xerox place learning to do color separations and actually producing the book. In the meantime, Tilly Olson came along and handed us Life in the Iron Mills. And that was our very, very first discovery that answered the question of my students, that is, what were women doing in the 18th century, the 19th century, and before? They were, of course, writing, only their writings disappeared. But Life in the Iron Mills is a novella, not quite a novel, published anonymously in The Atlantic in 1861 by a woman who was a Quaker and who lived in Wheeling, West Virginia, which was a border state, who, as far as we know, had been to no college. Mother was dead, and she nursed an ailing father. And her brother had gone off to fight as a member of the Confederate Army. Her father was on the Union side, and she produced this extraordinary story and sent it off to the Atlantic. And she said it had to be published anonymously because she knew that if it had a woman's name on it, nobody would read it or take it seriously. Hawthorne, when he read it, said, who is the writer of this story? He is the next genius of the age. And the editor, of course, told Hawthorne it was a woman, and Hawthorne said, fine, invite her. She couldn't come to Boston and Lexington to meet these people until 1865, when the war was over and her brother came back, because white middle-class women could not travel on trains except escorted by males, members of their families, especially if they were not married. We know about the story that Tilly had read this story when she was 15 in Omaha, Nebraska, but she never knew who wrote it until she read Emily Dickinson's letters or journals, I don't know which, in the 60s. And Emily Dickinson had found out who had written this story and had written her name in the stuff that Tilly was reading. And so Tilly then decided she would find out everything she could about Rebecca Harding Davis. And when Tilly handed this to me, she told me not to read it at night. She said, read it in the morning when you're fresh. And of course, I never listen to directions of that sort, and I'm always a little rebellious anyway, and so it seemed to me that was silly. I read it at night. I did not sleep that night. I just wept. It is a very, very moving story. Not only that, but it's as good as anything Tolstoy ever wrote, or Chekhov, or any of the great masters of the American short story. And it made me ask a lot of questions, like why had I never heard of this writer, even though I had a near PhD in English and had been teaching English literature for a great many years. It also made me wonder whether, since in her day people knew this was a great story, it made me wonder whether there might be other things lost out there. And of course, Tilly then supplied the answer to that question very readily because she produced Daughter of Earth by Agnes Smedley, which also bowled me over. And then Elaine Hedges produced
The Yellow Wallpaper by Charlotte Perkins Gilman. So we had three hits in a row, and all three things, two of them about working class people, made me realize that there was a lot more to be found out there. We then invented a reprints advisory committee consisting of about 12 literary scholars and 12 historians. And some of their names are quite famous now, and they were all young, feisty, male and female feminists then, some black, some white. And together we began to outline not only what was needed, but how we could find these things and how we would read in order to find them. And for every book we decided to publish, and we could only do about three or four a year, for every book we agreed to do, we turned down about 100 that we could have done. We were looking for literary excellence, perfection, really, and the historians had to agree that this book was going to be as valuable in a history course as in a literature course. The women's movement, at least for me, kept saying to everyone that history was the most important single thing that had been denied to us as women. And it seemed to me that the literature I read over and over again told me more history than the history books, which were all about laws and wars. At any rate, by 1973-74, we set as our goals the literary work of black women and white working class women, saying we would move on to Hispanic women and other women of color as soon as we could find works. We then set out to find Zora Neale Hurston.
One of the press's most enduring classics is I Love Myself When I Am Laughing, a collection of works by Zora Neale Hurston.
Alice Walker put together the anthology. She and I were both looking for the rights to Their Eyes Were Watching God, which is Zora Neale Hurston's only novel. And we both discovered at the same time that the University of Illinois had them tied up. We couldn't have them, but we could have the rights to all of these pieces of larger works. And this book came out in 1979, when Zora was absolutely unknown, and when a publicity person we had hired to help us with this was so impatient. She said, why can't you do writers like Alice Walker? Why are you doing this person? She's unknown. And we tried to, you know, explain over and over again, that's why we are doing her. Now, of course, Zora is a household name in some parts of the literary universe, but nobody had heard of her when we started. And the same for Mara Delasour, and the same for Agnes Smedley. So for the first decade, we focused on American writers, black and white, working class, and a couple of middle class writers. Beginning in 1980, we began to look across the ocean, and we found the Agnes Smedley of Sweden, for instance, whose name is Moa Martinson, and who really mirrored Agnes Smedley's life with one exception. Instead of the abortions Agnes had, Moa had five children without marrying Harry Martinson, who eventually became her husband and who was a Nobel Prize winner in Sweden. But Moa wrote her own five or six novels and is absolutely brilliant. One of them is called Women and Apple Trees, and another one is called My Mother Gets Married. And again, she's a working class, self-taught writer who is remarkable for telling the story of the class that most people know nothing about. We then turned to Egypt, Bangladesh, and India, and began to produce works by writers, many of whom were their country's first feminists. Next, Women Writing in India, 600 BC to the present, in two volumes, will be out. And our argument has been to funders here, who have been especially unwilling to fund such things as the India book, that Indians who live in this country, I mean Asian Indians, also have a history. Their history is in India, and this history happens to be a very long history. 2,600 years in the West, women have only been writing for 900 years? Less? Less. Women were writing in 600 BC. That is not only, therefore, the history of Indian women, it's the history of all women if you want to identify with women who have been writers. So I thought this was extremely important, yet funding agencies who are willing to fund women of color projects
if they are American-based, will not fund international ones like this. We're doing this anyway. We're always, we think, a little ahead of the times. So from 72 to 82, we were mostly 80% on soft money for projects and 20% on book sales and sales of other things. We're now just the reverse, but we still have no core support.
You're listening to a WINGS program featuring Florence Howe, director of the Feminist Press. At this point in her speech, Howe acknowledged a $200,000 gift from board member Genevieve Vaughn, which bailed out the press in the 1980s. She went on to say that 1991 figures showed $650,000 in book sales and foreign rights and an $850,000 budget. Howe went on to describe the relationship between the Feminist Press and City University of New York.
The support we have from the university right now is our free rent. The space we have, we don't pay rent for, and I get a tenured professor's salary and a half for the last 5 years, and am released from teaching to run the press. That's the university's contribution. Before that, no teaching, no money. I mean, you know, I used to teach at a different university, but it became impossible increasingly to keep the press going and teach. So from 72 to 82, we ran the press mostly on soft money for book projects. The way we got money to print the Zora volume was that we asked Toni Morrison to write a begging letter for us, which she did. It went out to a couple of thousand people, and we raised $9,000, which was what the printing bill was. Such things have really tripled now. At any rate, we tried to learn how to market and how to be very businesslike. And that, to some extent, has paid off. We have managed to stay alive. But if you don't have capital and you succeed, which is exactly what's happening to us now, we're doing better than we have ever done. If you don't have capital, do you know what you have to have in an economy like ours? You have to have debt. Debt. Because the debt is your capital. So you have to be able to borrow money in order to pay for book publishing. The thing about book publishing is just like manufacturing anything. You have to pay for what you manufacture before you earn the money back on it. And that's capitalism. Okay? So at any moment in time, we are owed about $160,000. But that $160,000 is often not payable to us for a year. So we carry about $200,000 in debt now, thanks to a black credit union in Harlem, the only institution in New York City willing to lend us any money at all, and to a vice president of a printing house, a woman, who owns one-third of a printing firm in Michigan, who was willing to let us borrow money against our printing bill up to $100,000, and then she rolled it over at a bank, so that she got the banknote. No bank would ever lend us money. Partly because of the word feminist. The women officers of the bank were anxious, but they always had to answer to a male superior. There's still no woman in charge of a bank in this country, and or even of a branch.
Florence Howe is speaking in 1992.
And so the men always said no, even though the women presented a very good case. We're clearly earning our keep. All we need is capital. So I spend my time begging and patching. I borrow $10,000 in January from a board member and then pay it back in June and then borrow another $10,000 from another person and pay it back in September. This year, because last year was such a good year for us, our sales went up nearly 20%. 32 books were out of stock at the end of December instead of the usual 18. This is out of a list of 113. And so I borrowed $30,000, and I will get only about 10 of those 38 books back into stock immediately. The rest will have to wait perhaps till next year. And of course, this is critical because these books are used mainly in courses. If you were in an English department somewhere, and my age, you probably know about the Feminist Press. But if you are a faculty member and in your 20s and 30s, you probably don't, because we have not had money the last 8 years to do advertising through the mail to new PhDs. That's one of the things we hope to do in the next year or two if we raise sufficient capital. So why we're still in business? We still have enormous work to do. We have about 100 projects in the editorial office. At least 50 of them are fiction. Some of it is African fiction. Some of it is Asian fiction. And I've really talked about that in talking about the Indian anthology. But some of it is American, but it's not the kind of American we've seen before. It's Japanese American working class, for example, by a woman who's totally unknown except on the West Coast to a few specialists in short stories, who's in her late 60s, who's never going to write a novel. She writes plays part of the time. Who's self-taught. She's never been to college. She's sort of a Tilly Olson, but Japanese American, and who a creative writing teacher at the University of Oregon has discovered and thinks would be wonderful to have us do a book of her 12 short stories so that Japanese American students and others will have this wonderful volume. A huge volume was just sent to us. Ordinarily, people, if you know people who have managed, don't send them to me. What I prefer to have is a letter outlining what it is you think you might send to me, or a letter and a table of contents or a little sample, but don't send a manuscript ever to any publisher unless you know, or until you know, it's what that publisher does. Mostly, people who send manuscripts to me, I have to send them back, because we don't publish new fiction, we don't publish new poetry, we don't publish PhD theses, we don't publish drama, and so on. But this thing came, and it was the life's work, translated into English, of a Finnish woman who came to this country as a small child and became connected to a Finnish language newspaper that then became a magazine, and that kept working Finns alive culturally in their own language as they became Americans. It was a national and regional magazine. And she was first a secretary, and then she was a worker on it, and she always wrote for it, but then she became the editor, and then she died. And as a memorial to her, dear friends had the whole thing translated by various hands, packed it up, and sent it to us. We gave it to Mary Jo Buell, who's worked with us for 2 decades, and we thought she'd have the time to read it because she had just gotten one of those Wonder Awards from the MacArthur people, and because she's always been involved in working class ethnic literature, and she has given it a totally rave review. So I thought, well, these would be wonderful things to publish, and I asked my distributor, who's a very good friend, a student of mine formerly at Goucher, who knows the feminist press, who was once co-director, and who really knows publishing, and who has helped get us into thousands of bookstores across the country, really cares about what we do. And she said to both of those ideas, I don't think so. And I said, why not? I could not understand why not. And she said, well, she said, the Japanese stuff sells a little bit. She said, but the Finnish, you know, nobody knows her, and she's dead, and I just began to feel ill. But of course, it was also a moment of enlightenment. I understood why. Earlier this year, I was on a panel with a trade publisher who, after hearing me speak, said, I have just the manuscript for you. This is a great writer. She's dying of cancer. It's her last novel. There are other novels that are also great. They're out of print. She's in her 70s. You'll love it. So I said to him, well, you are a literary editor. Why don't you publish it if it's so great? He said, well, my list is very crowded right now. He said, I'll send it to you, see what you think. Now, he has called me constantly to see if I would publish that novel. And you see, and he's never wanted to. His list can't be filled forever, right? Why isn't he publishing it? And it suddenly occurred to me as I was talking to my distributor, who, as I say, is the best in the business, that obviously it is not the thing to do in commercial publishing to publish anyone who's dead, or who's dying, or who's only going to have one book, because what are commercial publishers interested in? Hype, right? You want the person on television. You want an attractive person to go around and sell books in bookstores. You want somebody to write a second book because the first book makes money, you don't want to end there. And in fact, in selling foreign rights, the houses in Sweden and Norway, for instance, that have Tilly Olson and Alice Walker and Grace Paley will not take Paul Marshall. Why? I say Paul Marshall is as good as any of them. Well, because we can only do the writers we're doing because they are known. And so if they do another book, we'll do another book by them. But if we take another writer, we've got to get that writer known. And we can't do that. It's too much work. And besides, then we'd have to publish all of her books, and we can't do that. It's impossible. So they just stick with the ones they know. They won't even take new ones who are alive, right? They certainly won't take anyone who's dead. And I guess the last piece of evidence of that, it just dawned on me. I haven't known this before. We published Now in November, won the Pulitzer Prize in 1934. It's one of the great novels of all times. No question in my mind. First novel, almost no one could believe that a 24-year-old slip of a girl had written a novel that won the Pulitzer Prize. It holds up, it's timeless, it's marvelous prose. It's the only 30s book that is anything as good as Tilly Olson. No one will buy foreign rights. I've really tried to sell this to everybody in Scandinavia who buys American books, and to the people in Germany, for instance, who are doing American authors, who are very popular in Germany. Why won't they? Because she's dead. Is that incredible? So I guess that's still the last and probably the best reason why the feminist press has to go on, even though it's quite true the trade publishers are publishing women, university presses are publishing women, but they're not publishing dead women. It doesn't matter to them that these things are historically important.
Florence Howe, director of the Feminist Press. Her speech was recorded by Sally Jacques of the Foundation for a Compassionate Society.
This talk first aired in 1995 for the Feminist Press's 25th anniversary. In 2020, the press turned 50. Florence Howe has retired, and the new director is Jamia Wilson, a well-known young black writer, formerly vice president of programs at the Women's Media Center. Publishing on demand and e-publishing have reduced the capital needed to publish or reprint a book, and they do now publish work by living authors. Find their complete list and more at feministpress.org. For more about Wings, email wings@wings.org. Thanks to all our supporters, including Genevieve Vaughn, whose works can be found through the website forgiving.com. That's for-giving.com. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle Is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service. Africa unite, Batsilelile.
Africa unite, Batsilelile. Sumaza gazela, ah, avelele. Sumaza gazela, ah, avelele. Sumaza gazela.
And welcome to Amandla. And guess what? It is that time of year again where we are going to be repeating the station's phone number over and over again because it's funding drive at CKUT. And We're thrilled. We got out the gate really, really quickly. We put out an appeal to supporters whose emails we had yesterday. And within the span of the day, we raised $1,230.
Wow. Fantastic.
Absolutely overjoyed.
Thank you, folks out there. At least now we know people are listening.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll be thanking them by name later on in the show. But what you need to know right now, if you have not already donated, is to give us a call. 514-448-4013.
Or if you
between
can't...
now and Sunday. Go ahead, Doug.
Well, if you can't phone, go online. It's really easy. CKUT, it's one of the easiest donation features I've seen. CKUT.ca/donate. And you'll see not only the form to fill out for the donations and what each donation will get you in terms of the prizes that are there, but also you'll see pictures of those prizes.
Yep. And I was just actually on that website, and CKUT has already raised 50 or attained 57% of its funding goal. So we're